Welcome to our weekly Q&A show, where we answer submitted questions live on YouTube on Tuesdays at 2 p.m.
Well, thank you, everybody, for being here, being part of the show. This is a Q&A show that I do every Tuesday, almost every Tuesday, usually at 2 p.m., where I answer questions I've received throughout the week. And I always get a few questions here and there. Ideally, you go to Whitewater Guidebook, find the form, submit them that way. But even better is just show up and ask questions like this. This makes it way easier for me. So, kid, thanks for just adding it there. It's easy to answer. I'm going to get to this first today. And then I have a few things I want to talk about with knives because I've been going knife crazy. And I keep going through these epic knife buying sprees. And we'll get into the questions we're asked during the week. So if you ask a question, hang tight for a minute or just come back in 10 minutes. We'll get to it. A kid's question is 18-foot boat with 6.5 more rise on one end than the other. Do you rig higher end to be bow or stern? Do you rig the higher end to be bow or stern for Grand Canyon trip? Thinking bow so stern is lower to push through laterals and downstream ferrying. Kid, I'm not an expert in the Grand Canyon. I've done a few trips. I could be wrong here. I'm just going to tell you what I think. This is my opinion. I could be totally wrong here. In the Grand Canyon and Big Water, you want bow rocker to go through waves. If you don't have less bow rocker, you'll kind of hit things and stop. So bow rocker helps you climb over waves and climb through holes. So part of me thinks, put it in the front, because if I'm going to hit a big hole on accident, I'm probably going to hit it straight and we'll hopefully have a chance of climbing out. But if I'm going to, the way I'm going to make all my moves in Grand Canyon personally is with a downstream ferry. I'm going to turn that boat around and pull through laterals. And my last Grand Canyon trip, just over and over and over, downstream ferry, pulled through laterals, avoided everything. So if it was me, I'd probably put it in the stern, the bow, the more bow rocker to help go through laterals. I don't think the boat's intended to be that way. I think it's intended for that to the rocker to be in the bow. It's going to look funny with the rocker in the stern. But the way I boat and the way I think is the best way to boat the Grand Canyon is to downstream ferry almost all of those moves, like bedrock, well, except for lava. Lava, you're not going to downstream ferry. But pretty much everything else to me was a downstream ferry. So the other advantage of having the bow rocker in the stern and having less in the bow is when you're loading and unloading your boat at camp, you're not loading up over that ramp. So I like, for me on overnight trips, I like having less rocker, in big part because it's easier to load and unload that boat. So honestly, if you gave me a boat in the Grand Canyon, it wouldn't matter. I'm fine with it in the bow or the stern. I don't really care. But if I want to fine tune it for how I boat, I would put it in the stern. Although it will look funny, so I might put it in the bow just to not stand out. Not to have to answer the question, why did you put the rocker in the stern? Sometimes I'm a little introverted and shy. I don't want to have discussions all the time about detailed things. So it depends on my mood a little bit. So that's my thoughts. Hopefully I answered that question okay, kid. Before we get to the questions, I want to talk about knives. I've been on this knife thing for ever. And for those of you who don't know, these NRS knives are just awful. They're really bad. If you have these, please take it off your PFD. They have bottle openers, which is ridiculous. Just put it in your kitchen, use it to open beer bottles. Like this is, I just really don't like these. If you're a rafter, they're going to get caught on things and they're pulling yourself back in the boat. I'm just not a fan. I am a fan of if knives inside your pocket. That's a whole discussion I don't want to have. I just reviewed this knife by Spyderco. It's like $200. I think on Amazon it's $150. It's a Spyderco Enough. I'm going to post it soon. It's a sweet knife. I mean, that's an edge that will cut rope. This is not an edge that will cut rope. This NRS knife, this cuts rope. I mean, you can see there's like a shimmer in the steel. The difference in steel is remarkable. But the knife I forgot about, and I'm kind of coming back to, is this Spyderco Assist. And I'm going to do a review on this in a little bit. It's in your PFD knife, and it is a sweet blade. It's not a 100% serrated edge, but again, you can see it's great steel. Again, made in Japan. I'm pretty sure the Japanese know how to make knives, right? There's a long legacy of samurai swords. I don't think Chinese are known for making steel. So if I'm going to choose good steel for anything, I'm going to go with this Japanese steel. It's a U.S. company. They're based in Colorado, Spyderco. And I've been thinking, I used to not like this knife for carrying your PFD because it's kind of big and bulky and it's a little overkill, but it being big is nice. It's harder to lose. When you're fidgeting with a smaller knife, it's easier to drop in the river. This would be harder to drop in the river. And also, like, for those of you that are Boy Scouts and can open knives like that, it's kind of nice. Like, if you pull out your PFD, you can just flick the wrist and open it up. You don't have to do this whole thing all the time. It's just quick to get out your PFD, go, and cut. The other thing about this knife, here's some rope that somebody told me. I did a review on Gear Garage. It was one of my first 20, probably. I was terrible at making videos back then. You can put the rope in it like this. Sorry, this is awkward. You can put the rope in it like this and then cut it like that. It's kind of cool, right? Like, you just, if you just take it, go like that, and it pretty easily cuts it. So I'm going to do a review on this knife again, the Spyderco Assist. I'm starting to think this, I go back, as you all know, I review knives. I think about them. I obsess on this. What's the best knife for this? I'm kind of into this Assist right now. Super blunt tip. I mean, you can't get more blunt than that. It's purposely blunt. I mean, it's pretty amazing what this thing is. It's handle grips. This is meant to cut rope. This is meant to be a rescue knife. So what happens is I review a knife. I say good and bad. And somebody goes, oh, no, buy this knife instead. It's better. And I buy it. I try it. It's not that great because I spent $100 on it. I got to review it. I review it, share my thoughts. Somebody goes, oh, no, buy this next knife. I have been told to buy so many knives in the search of the perfect river knife. And my only answer for you is something that's, if it's in your PFD, in a unzip, the best ones, I think, go in your pocket. And if you want to save some money, buy one of the Spyder, the Caracara knives by Spyderco. Like, they're ones that are, they're made in China. I think those knives are made in China, but they're better than the NRS ones, or the Gerber, whatever it's called, the Gerber yellow one. If you want to save money, if you want to spend money, something like this thing is pretty awesome. Okay, I'm going to move on to the questions people asked. And if you have questions, also add them in the comments. I'll be happy to get to them. We're going to go through some cool stuff today. The first one has to do with grab lines. And somebody saw these grab lines with an outfitter in the Penobscot. I think that's in Maine. Let me know. Thoughts. So here's... So this slide is really cool. They're just pieces of rope. If you look at that left photo, it's just like a foot and a half of rope with a knot at the end versus a traditional one that we, a lot of people are using, like the air handle, where it's a handle you can grab. And my first instinct is I want to hate it because it's not the norm. It's not what we all do. You know, like anything that's new and different and innovative, it's like, I want to be a hater. I mean, I really can't see much wrong with this. I don't think this will become an entrapment. I don't think this could get wrapped around an arm. It could, maybe. I mean, I'd probably go a little shorter, actually. That knot at the end is nice for gripping. I mean, I think for grabbing, it's just easy to grab that big, thick rope and hold on to versus the handles. The handles in a lot of these rafts, like the one on the right, the air handle, you could theoretically put a hand through there, a foot through there, although they're pretty snug. They are still, oh, my volume's off. Really? Does anybody else hear my volume? Let me check. Can somebody else tell me if my volume's off? Blair's saying my volume's off. Are you sure it's not your on your end, Blair? Let me check the, how do I check this? Let me check my settings, audio, test. It says it's working. Oh, yep. There you go. Thanks, guys. Okay. So my audio is off sometimes. So thanks. I've gone in 10 minutes in the thing and just talked to myself. So I think these handles are potential entrapments too. So which one's safer? They're pretty similar. The rope is cheaper. The rope is simple. I bet people really have an easy time grabbing it. I don't really have a problem with it. I'm not going to use it. I think it's clunky rope. It's going to smack people. It's not a really great thing. For my applications, I'm not going to use it, but I can't find a reason to tell others they shouldn't. I don't see a problem with it. Unless I would test it, though. Can I get a hand wrapped around it and pull where it's tight? I bet I could. So if it was me, I'd probably cut off like 8 inches, and I bet you couldn't wrap your hand in it. Or it'd be hard to. Those are my thoughts. Hopefully I answered that question. Go back to the question really quick. So it's a foot and a half long section of an inch rope. Is it really an inch rope? That's thick. Anchored in a D-ring, one per person. Yeah, I don't think, I mean, it'd be hard to entangle. I think it's a clever solution. So my first instinct is it's new and it's different. Be a hater, but thinking about it, I think it's kind of cool. Okay. It'd be cool to hear your opinion of the Illinois versus Tuolumne since you ran the T this year. Yeah, so I guided on Tuolumne for 7 years. And I've probably done, I mean, 2 trips a week for 7 summers. That's a lot of trips. The Illinois, I've probably only done 25 times, maybe something like that. And I'm a guide there, so I do it a lot. 25 at the most on the Illinois. So we had on the Tuolumne, I did a Tuolumne trip this summer, and my friend Steve was on that trip, and we discussed this same thing. Which one's more difficult, the Tuolumne or the Illinois? And it's a really good question. And Steve has some good points. And the biggest one was that the Tuolumne is easier to us because we've done it so many times. And usually at like 900 to 1200 CFS. Like I have that river memorized at summer flows. I mean, I've done it so many times. Even coming back, I hadn't done it for 10 years. I came back, remembered almost everything. I mean, I got lost a few times at the entrances of rapids. I'd ask for some lines, but I mean, when you run it that many times, that many at that flow, it's you kind of memorize it. The Illinois, most people, even guides, only do this at most 3 or 4 times a year. It's not a river that we're repeating over and over and over as much. And when you run the Illinois, it's never the same river twice. I have never done it at the same flow twice. The Tuolumne, I've done it at whatever it is, 1,050, whatever that summer flow is, exactly a bazillion times, right? Well, the Illinois, there's no upstream dam to regulate flows. There's snowmelt, there's rain, there's dry flows, there's wet flows, which means dry flows means it's mostly snowmelt coming down and springs. Wet flows means it just rains. So the gauge can say 1,000 at Kirby, and Miami Bar could be like 1,200, and takeout could be like 1,400, not that different. That's a dry flow. A wet flow means the gauge is 1,000 at Kirby. It's like 2,000 at whatever, higher at Miami, and double or triple that because of all the creeks coming in, all the low elevation creeks. They're saturated and bringing in water. So either it's never like if you launch 1,000 at Kirby, it's never the same either. Sometimes the top end's low, sometimes the top end's high. It's a whole thing. It's every single time you're figuring it out. And it doesn't just stay at 1,000. Sometimes you run it at 650. Sometimes you run it at 3,000. And because only do it a few times a year, it's just, to me, harder. Now, if you look at them side by side, I would say like the Tuolumne 1,000 and the Illinois 1,000, I'm going to say the Illinois is slightly easier as a river. But because we memorize the Tuolumne, it's way easier to me. Whereas the Illinois is always different, you know, and you can't memorize the lines. Like Little Greenwall is a mess all the time. I think the Tuolumne is a great place to train for the Illinois. If you want to go run the Illinois, if you can run the T confidently, that's a good first step for sure. But I think the Illinois gives me more anxiety. The other big difference of the Illinois is that below the biggest rapid on the Tuolumne, Clavey, if you flip there, there's Son of Clavey, but generally you have 2 miles to recover before Gray's Grindstone. If you flip in Greenwall, you got to recover pretty quick because you're entering the hardest rapids. And so the thing that gives me the most anxiety about running an Illinois trip is what happens when a boat flips at Greenwall. Do I have a bunch of class 5 boaters around that can deal with this? Or are we a little bit weak? And if the flow is high, it gets even worse. And so I think that the potential flip at Greenwall gives me a lot of anxiety. Where the flip at Clavey, where the Clavey's probably the most likely place you'll flip, pretty easy to manage. And most places that flip on the T is like pretty manageable, where I think Greenwall is tough. So those are my thoughts on the differences. If you went to a website, my website, and I'm curious if somebody has time to do this. I don't really want to do this right now and waste everybody's time. But if you went to, if somebody wants to do this and report back, if you went to the Illinois, I'd be kind of curious if somebody counted how many class four rapids there are here. My guess is it's like six. Like quick, there's like Greenwall plus like, I don't know, maybe six or eight class four rapids. If you went to the Tuolumne, let's just say we call Clavey class five. There's probably 12 class fours. There's a lot more class fours. So I think there's more on the Tuolumne. There's more class four stuff. There's more rapids of class four level on the Tuolumne than Illinois, and they're packed. It's like bam, 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 bam. Whereas the Illinois, because we don't memorize it at all the different flows, you're always kind of reading water there. The other thing is Clavey versus Greenwall, which one's harder? I think it's Greenwall, but it's close. I mean, because we memorize, if you showed up and had never seen Clavey and you scouted it, you're like, whoa, that's a rapid. Same thing with Greenwall. You're like, whoa, that's a rapid. And you may not know where to go at Clavey without being somebody. Okay. So let's say, Edward, I'll get to your question in a minute. The worst thing that could happen is a wrap, not so much a flip. I've done a Clavey the worst way possible and yet to flip. The worst thing that could, it depends on the flow, Sagebrush. At high water, a flip on a tee is, or the, when you wrap, it's definitely a bummer, but your people in your boat are generally accounted for. When you flip, there's a whole mess moving downstream you have to account for. So like a flip on the tee at 6,000 up is pretty messy. And same thing on the Illinois. If you flip at like 2,000 or higher, it's messy. I've seen a lot of flips at Clavey myself. Now it depends on the flows you're doing it at. 1,000, it's really hard to flip there. But when I used to work there, the rapid change. There used to be like this nasty hole to flip a lot of boats. I heard it's easier now, but I've seen a lot of boats flip there at like 2,500 and higher. So you can definitely flip at Clavey. You can also, but I've seen, yeah, you can wrap at Clavey too. But a high water flipping there was definitely used to be a more of a thing, I think. Yeah, I mean, the worst thing that can happen on the tee at 1,200 is somebody dying. Let's just start with that. Or getting seriously injured. And then next would be probably you're most likely going to wrap. And it's usually pretty manageable. And on the Tuolumne, you can – people do it. It's a day trip all the time. If you have a problem, you can get out that day. Right. And there's some evac trails that are not bad. The Illinois is way more remote. So it's harder to just get out in a day or to hike out. Right. It's like if you have a problem, there's a trail down to Clavey. You could hike out there if you needed to. There is no trail to Greenwall. That whole section from Pine Flat to Silver Creek, there's no hiking out. You could maybe bushwhack it if you were incredibly fit and adventurous and didn't get poison oak and weren't afraid of ticks or rattlesnakes, you could probably get out. But if you have a serious accident on the Illinois, it's probably a helicopter. Where the T, not as likely. Okay. Let's go to this one. Well, let's finish this question. A California progression list like your one for Oregon be interesting as well. We've talked about this before on shows. I can just quickly do it. Start with the class two stuff, lower McCollum. There's a bunch of class two stuff. The Russian depends on the time of year, summer versus winter too. So we'll just say including like rain fed stuff. There's a bazillion class two runs in California. It's mind blowing. And they're amazing. Like, of course, there's a class two on the South Fork. There's a class two on the lower North Fork American. There's the part on the lower American. There's so much stuff in the Coast Range, like the Russian, the Eel, to find like class two, easy class three. So many cool class two things to experience there. Class three, probably the South Fork American is the classic. The Merced's a little harder. The Kings is in there. And then we'll move up to like three, class 3-4 stuff. Maybe like the Lower Kern. Higher Water, South Fork American, the lower part of the Cal Salmon below, I think, the Butler section, the Pillsbury Run on the Eel. There's some stuff on the North Yuba, South Yuba, Edward to Purden, Washington to Edwards. Oh, sorry, Edward to Purden, Washington Edwards is like 3+4. And then a solid 4, I would say like North Fork American, Tuolumne, the more difficult parts of the North Yuba. The lower, you could put the Lower Kern maybe in there. It's like 4-ish. The Kuya, yeah. And then the class 5 is Cal Salmon, Forks of the Kern, Giant Gap, Cherry Creek. So if I have time, I'll make a list, but that's my quick list. Okay. Let's get to this one. Can we talk about cats and how to get into it? I only wrap the cats that cool in the water. Definitely like the wing 11 foot, but I'm looking at 12 foot high side or 14 foot. Yeah. I mean, Edward, you just buy one and make some friends and you go. I'm not sure how else to tell you to get into it. But let me say, buy one, make some friends, get some training, whether that's rescue training, first aid training, maybe take a class. Just learn some things. Like, I made a bazillion, if you want to watch my videos, made a bazillion videos. Learn how to push and pull and downstream ferry. Don't just get into pushing. And then go. You got to have some friends and just go do it. You get better by doing it. Hopefully that helps. I don't really have any good advice for you. If you tell me where you live, I can maybe give you a little bit more advice. I probably wouldn't go with the 14 foot though. The 14 foot, I said 12 foot high sides, cool. I probably wouldn't go with that fort. It's just like bigger boats are harder for day trips. And it's just more to carry, to put in, carry, to take out. It's a lot of boat to manage. Like a little 11, 12 foot boat, maybe the 12 and a half Sotars are a staple. Maybe go, I think it's a 12 and a half. It's good for almost everything. I would not go 14 foot boat, but let me look really quick at this high side 12 foot. I didn't know high side had 12 foot. 12 foot cat. Nimbus 12. I really like their boats, so I'm probably gonna like this. Let's go to, where are we at? Nimbus. Yeah, that looks like a sweet boat. Yeah, it looks like there's not too much rocker. I think some of the newer boats put too much rocker on them and they can't hold an angle. Like, they're nimble enough. They don't need tons of rocker. So that looks like a sweet boat. Yeah, I'm a fan. Lots of D-rings, frame chafers, triple bonded seams. Looks like people getting rad in the photos. Look at that. They're getting really rad. Yeah. I think this 12 foot is sweet. I would definitely be stoked on that boat. Okay. Oh, here we go. Oh man. Thanks, Cody. Let me go. So per the book, there's 10 class 4 rapids on the Illinois. Okay. How many on the T? There's more. There's probably, I'm going to guess there's 12. And hold on. 18, 22. Hold on. Let's not use the book. So heavy here. The book is awesome, but it overrates things. The book also says don't run it above 1600, I think, too. I think the book is cool. It's a little dated. 22, 24. I bet a few of those we call 3+ now. I don't know which ones. Rapid 108. Which ones are those? On the California list, Lower Klamath. Yeah, that's a great one, BJ. Class 2-3. No one in the Arctic cats, super rare. Yeah, it's awesome. I'm also, lately, I've been rowing my raft and having a great time. And some advantages to a raft are you can bring a friend really easily. We find in our rowing schools when we have both rafts and cats, people really enjoy the rafts more. Like, we have a hard time selling. Like, I own a bunch of cats for our rowing schools and nobody uses anymore. So I'm going to say, don't discount rowing your raft. I mean, it's you, if you already own one, I mean, the cats surf better. The rafts surf better in pour overs, but I mean, yeah, cats are fun too. I mean, yeah. Yeah. It looks sweet. 13 foot legend. Yeah, exactly. Like, I think people buy these cats that are too big. The 12 and a half for that legend, if I remember right, is the sweet spot. Like, I have the 11 foot legend and the 12 and a half foot legend and the 11 foot wings. I still have two 11 foots and a 12 and a half. I still rarely take the 12 and a half out. It's just so much boat to move. It's just like, and on the water, it's just heavier. When those 11 foot cats, they're super light. They're nimble. You can move them around. They're not as forgiving. They're a little more likely to flip, but you can move them around way better. You can stop on a dime. So I think a lot of people over get some that are too long. There you go. Nice. Okay. Let's get back to questions. So hopefully if I have time, I'll work on this California progression. Hopefully I can just, that verbally helped. Okay. Next question. Whoa. Okay. I'm organizing a private trip on the Rogue Wild and Scenic late October. What a cool time to go. Can be cold, but man, what an awesome time to go. Hardly anybody out there. There's some people litter a bunch of pumpkins, so you can clean up a lot of people's messes when they leave pumpkins behind. Done it many times. My son-in-law is new to it. He's telling me that he wants to make the trip in fishing chest waders, rain jacket, and Type 5 PFD. Okay, red flag. Fishing waders are not appropriate for whitewater. Rain jacket is not bad, but Type 5, that doesn't mean anything to me. Like, that means nothing. Like, there are Type 5 just means a special use or rescue or something. It doesn't mean it's going to save you better. So I almost wish, it depends on the Type 5 PFD. Is it the flotation's what matters? Does he have a lot of flotation? I'm concerned that the chest waders are a death trap if he takes a swim at Blossom Bar, etc. Yeah, so what happens is the fishing waders fill with water, and I guess you could sink. People have said you sink, but what really happens is they fill with water and you can't swim because you have so much mass attached to you, and you're basically in the water, like you're part of the river. And so it's really hard to self-rescue, and self-rescue is really important. So yeah, it would be a bummer. Another young man joining us, extremely good fishing partner, insists that this is okay and we'll do the same. Well, he's wrong. Are they wearing waders because they want to wade out in the river or fish, or because that's all they have? It may be because that's all they have and they want to be warm. But if they want to wear waders, or they just like, they fish, so they got to wear their waders. Like, I've never that I can remember ever seen, and I don't fish. I don't pay attention to fishing people, anglers. I don't think the Rogue is a river you wade into fish. Like, I can see that on like other rivers that are different. I just don't think waders are an important part of fishing on the Rogue. And if I'm wrong, tell me. I just think like people like their outfits. Like, they have these $300 waders that they maybe put on like 8 times a year, and they got to wear their waders because they bought them. They're like a certain brand. They're like Orvis. So they got to wear their Orvis waders. Like, this is kind of ridiculous. I don't think they need the waders. All right. Anyway, let me finish this. I am Whitewater Rescue certified. Okay. And I've taken some gnarly swims in both my neoprene and dry suit. What does it mean to be Whitewater Rescue certified? I don't think you're Whitewater Rescue certified. In fact, if you've taken a whitewater, unless you've taken some very crazy class that I don't know about, when you take a rescue class, a swiftwater rescue class, you get a participation card. Nowhere on there does it say you're certified. It just says you completed this class. Nobody out there is certified. Maybe Rescue 3 certifies some people. I don't think so. They're called Whitewater Rescue Technicians. But they're not certified. So you've taken a class and you've participated in the class. I don't think you're certified. Maybe I'm wrong. If you're certified, let me know. Show me your card. I'd love to see it, your certification card. Okay. I'm taking all these swims in both my neoprene and dry suit. I've never been more terrified than I slipped into the chutes and my chest waders filled even my belt. Yeah. It's legit. My Question is, do I insist on no waders, swim in your skivvies for all I care, but I will not take you if you insist on wearing chest waders, even the top rated vest. Okay, just go back to the vest. Type 5 is not top rated. It is a type of vest. The top, for them, they should be wearing the most flotation over their rating. Okay, so just don't wear chest waders. Okay, I mean, this, okay, I'm not triple leader, just a grumpy old man. Do I just shut up? Okay, it depends. As a commercial outfitter and a guide, I would say, no, you can't do that. I have a responsibility for these people. So I would just say, no, I'm responsible for it. You cannot wear that on the trip you're doing with me because I'm at work and I have a responsibility. It depends if you feel like you have responsibility for them. Like if I'm on a private trip and people are doing dumb things, I'm like, if I'm not responsible, I'm just like, I'm going to tell you what I think. And then if you do your thing, sucks to be you. Like I'm going to give you my opinion. And if you don't listen to me, you're going to get yourself in trouble. But also like if I'm on a trip and I don't want to be around drama, which is like potential fatality, potential major rescue, I might just be like, I don't even want to deal with this. Either you guys don't go or I'm not going. I don't really on my vacation want to be around a dangerous incident. Right. So you could say, so you could take the case that's like, hey, you be you. I'm not responsible for you. I've told you what I think. We'll find out what happens. You could take the thing where you're like, I don't want to deal with this on my vacation. This is my time off. This is like my me time. I don't want to deal with you potentially getting hurt. So I'm not going, or you're not going. One of us isn't going. If you do feel a sense of responsibility, did you say this is a private trip? Yeah. If you're organizing it, if you feel like you have responsibility for these people, hey, I'm organizing this. I'm responsible for the health and safety of these people. Yeah, you can't go if you're gonna wear those waders. It's not responsible. It's not a good idea. It's unsafe. And maybe the fashion is amazing. Maybe they're like the perfect color of camouflage and they have the Orvis logo really big and they're going to be able to stand in the water up to their waist while they're trying to catch fish. And they're going to look so cool for the photos because they have their cool waders on and they're wading in the water. But realistically, on the Rogue in October, you're not going to be wading in the river catching fish. That's just like, it's just a fashion choice. So I don't know. Hopefully that's what you're looking for. Yeah, my answer is, wait, you're organizing it, but you're not the trip leader. I'm organizing a private trip on the Royal Golden Scenic. In the bottom, you say, I'm not the trip leader. So I don't know. The trip leader, I feel like the trip leader might feel responsible for them. It's up to you, whatever you want to do. But I'd probably just be like, you guys are, come on. Seriously, waiters? They're probably, because they fish, they're probably going to want to drink beer all day in the boat, and they're probably going to take their PFD off too. So, all right, let's get to comments. We have a lot to go. Okay, Paul. What's up, Paul? Do you have an episode on lining? I do somewhere. Yeah, I do have an episode on lining boats. I'm pretty sure I've done an episode. It's on our, we definitely have some in our online video series that we pay, that cost money, but there's some different techniques. And there's some different school of thoughts. I think the number one rule is just don't get caught up in the rope management. Keep that rope tight, keep it coiled, let some out, get it back in. Just really focus on rope management. I like to row my raft on my cat. I feel like a ninja pretty much. Yeah. Yep. Cats are pretty cool. I really, if I'm going to run something where I'm a little nervous, I'll probably run my cat. Where if I'm just kind of goofing off, when I first started rowing the wind, I'd row the cat. But now that I'm done a million times, I love rowing the rafts. Yeah. But if I want to go do a new run that I haven't done, I'd probably row the cat. Only time for waders on the San Juan. You basically in Lake Powell. Yeah. Fishing waders, bad idea. Thanks, everybody. This really helps too. Like I have opinions and I shared them, but for those of you watching can also share your opinions. It will help this person make a decision. The waders are good for gravel by areas. I fish in a dry suit or some trunks now. Yeah. So there's like, take when you, I, when you take a rescue class, you're just participating. You're taking a class. There's no statement of your ability. Like, they may have a test for you to take at the beginning or the end. They might like make you do something, but they're just signing participation cards. You were there. You listened. You did some things. They're not. Yeah, there's just like, I just took a class. I heard some things. That's it. What are your favorite 5 campsites on the Rogue for sun and or rain? Oh, if I tell you my favorite campsites, you're going to camp there. And then I'm going to be fighting you for my favorite campsites. It's a trick question. Oh, I really don't want to tell you my 5 favorite camps. Because then they'll be more popular. All right, here we go. This is painful. I really don't want to share these. Oh, this hurts. But I'm going to do it. Wildcat, night one. Everything else, to me, night one is the same. I like Wildcat mainly because there's no toilet there, and so there's less competition for it. But I went for Wildcat a few years ago, and somebody was there, so we had to go down to Jenny. So Wildcat, probably. I don't like Upper Horseshoe. There's too much competition for it. I really like Lower Horseshoe, the one just past it. It's a cool camp. I'm just going down the river in my brain. I like Kelsey Wright a lot, but you typically want like 9 or fewer people. Kelsey Wright is really cool. Kelsey left for a big group. Awesome. Battle Bar is super sweet on the left, just past Kelsey. Most people don't camp it because it's a big carry up to the top, but the top is really cool. I don't like the ranch. I don't really like Missouri. I'm skipping so many small camps. Like Big Windy's really cool, but it's a brutal carry. I'm going backwards. Big Windy's really cool, but it's a brutal carry. And then going past there, my favorite the last night is Lower Solitude. But another big carry. I don't mind the big carries, so those are my favorite camps because people want the easy carries, and so I'll do the big carries, and so those are my favorite camps. There's no particular reason I like Lower Solitude, then I always have fun there. Half Moon Bar is really cool. That's more than 5. Clay Hill is awesome. But if somebody, you get to Clay Hill and somebody's there, you are in trouble. Yep. So Haldor is a Swiftwater Rescue instructor. I bet Haldor, with Rescue 3 in Europe, he is actually certified. So I'm pretty sure Rescue 3 Swiftwater Rescue instructors in Europe get certifications. And he's saying don't use waders. So we're hearing this from an expert right now. Don't do it. Tell him the ones you don't like. Never give. It did. I have those are my favorite camps. I have secret camps. The ones where like if the camp I want is taken, I have something that will work. It's not a great camp, but I know I have some spots where like, oh man, every camp is taken. I can fit a group here. Those are my secrets. I help Thomas. That's a tough, you're in a tough spot. I'm grumpy too. So if it was me and I wasn't a trip leader, I'd just be like, shouldn't do it. Terrible idea. But I don't know. I'm not your, wait, are you his parents? Wait, my son-in-law. Oh, it's your son-in-law. Oh, jeez. Yeah. Oh, man. Come on. It's your son-in-law. You have some responsibility. Yeah, I don't know. If it was me, I'd probably just be like, I'm not going anymore. I really love going, but I don't want to deal with this. But I know how important these trips are. I'm just like, my time on the river and out for vacation is so important to me. I don't want to go on a trip where I'm going to be stressed and deal with drama. And so sometimes, even though it's a great trip I look forward to, I'll just back out. Like, I don't want to deal with the drama. I don't want to deal with somebody potentially, like my son-in-law, swimming blossom and waders. So, yeah, I know. Did I share too much, Chris? It's so hard because I'm usually rolling with a full group. And so I also mentioned large camps, which is the most sought after camps. There's so many small little camps that I should have probably mentioned. Like, Jenny is great. If you're like 10 or – what's that one camp? There's this camp I camped at the first time last year. Oh man, it is really cool. I don't remember the names. I don't remember the names of the small camps, but like if you're 10 or fewer people, there are some really cool camps that people don't talk about. And Quail Creek. I used to go by that all the time. I'd see people up there and be like, oh man, they are baking in the sun. That looks miserable. It doesn't look like any fun, but it's actually pretty cool. Like a lot of cool campsites. And then just a short walk to this beautiful pool where you can just sit in the shade and swim, and just awesome. So Quail, so like 10 or fewer people camps. The first night they're all kind of big. I think there's a couple of small camps, but nothing of note. Like small person camps, Quail's cool. Kelsey Wright's cool. East Creek is really cool, especially if you like stop, hike up East Creek, and then just float down. Like the people don't want to hike, just float down, have them camp on the left. And then people East Creek, that's a killer hike up East Creek. East Creek is sort of a secret one. Brushy Bar used to be really cool too, but it's not that good anymore. And yeah, those are the good ones. Hopefully that helps. Well, everyone, I think that's a show. Thank you all for adding the questions in at the end and for submitting questions. It helps me. I don't know. I enjoy doing this and having questions I can answer, and it makes me feel competent. I really like it. So it really makes me feel good about myself to get questions and then do my best to answer them. I am wrong all the time, and I don't know what I'm talking about half the time. So take what I say with a grain of salt. These are just my opinions based on my experience. There's a lot of other experience out there. There's other people to learn from. So I'm just sharing you what I think, and it's fun for me to do. So thank you all for submitting questions. If you have a second, please like the show. Just hit the like button down there. Just take a second to hit like. If you're not a subscriber, be a subscriber. I have a new goal to hit 24,000 subscribers. I have 11,000 now. It's a big lofty goal, but that's my goal. I need goals. So I'm going to try to get to 24,000 subscribers. You can help right now by subscribing and make me feel good about myself. And yeah, that's the episode of the Tuesday show. We'll see you next week.